And Smashville, good morning. Thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Chase with you on this Thursday. And I was thinking about this yesterday, gentlemen, because we're in an interesting period of the calendar year for sports where a lot of sports right now have a global presence with soccer, the World Cup, Wimbledon, even Major League Baseball, and we're getting closer and closer to football season. And I want to ask you guys this question, and I want to ask our audience the question as well. Are we as a country lagging in sports excellence when it comes to sports across the board? Now, granted, with football, and I'm talking about American football, we crush it. The NFL is overwhelmingly American. Major League Baseball, mostly American, but there's a Latin influence. There's an Asian influence.
But it's still 70%, yep. If at least 70% American, if not more. I think the number was 29%. Non-American in 2017.
Now, we own the NBA, but there's certainly plenty of European players.
I bet you that number's higher than you think.
Yeah.
Of European players.
Yeah.
Or foreign-born players.
I think golf, I mean, we as a country are still very good, but when you factor in multiple continents, golf has become global. Soccer is heavily foreign, and we don't have a presence in the World Cup this year. And tennis is heavily foreign. So I'm thinking, like, with as great as America is, are we kind of lagging in the global look of sports, not just the main one which we care about, which is the NFL?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, hockey is an interesting one.
Because yeah, I miss hockey, yeah.
Hockey is probably, of the four major sports, hockey is probably by far in this country the most foreign. And Canada sort of counts as that, but does it really? So I think, you know, it's... We win the medal count almost every Olympics. Of all the major sports on the planet, we dominate them. People in this country don't care about boxing and tennis anymore, and that's unfortunate because I think they're great sports, but people don't care about them anymore. Soccer is growing, and that will be the interesting one, is how do we start to compete as soccer continues to grow in popularity with American young sports fans? How do we then offer them a product that is ours? That is a major question, but... other than tennis, I mean, who are the best golfers in the world? There's just as many Americans as there are anybody else, especially in the individual country, right? Like, Rory's from Ireland?
Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland. Do they have a large collection of great golfers, or is it just Rory McIlroy?
I mean, there's a few, but...
Because there's, like, 15 great American golfers right now.
Right.
Right? So, like, South Africa's got who?
Louis Oosthuizen.
Oh, okay. Who's England got?
Ian Poulter. Luke Donald, Ian Poulter.
So, my point is that if you put the rest of the world together, they can compete with the U.S.
Well, that's what I meant.
But when you look at the leaderboard, you're seeing Justin Thomas. You're seeing, you know, that Tiger and Phil are still the dominant names in the sport, even though they're not winning tournaments. Just Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, these guys are all Americans. So, I don't think we are. I think we are still very much the most dominant athletic country in the world. Just because we're not good at tennis and soccer doesn't change the fact that we still are basically dominating most sports.
Well, that's because other countries, when you talk football, other countries don't have the love for football that America does, and they can care less. Their love is soccer, and I think that's unanimous across, you know, any other, you know, country or continent other than here in North America. Basketball is different. Yes, we have when you talk excellence, yes, we have the bigger collection of players.
But we're far more athletic.
Yeah, we're far more athletic. But I just think now these kids, regardless of where where you're at, if you grew up watching this sport, like I'm just watching, you know, a kid that plays basketball over, I think it's, I don't know, Yugoslavia somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not a country.
Yeah, I know, but somewhere, whatever it is. Croatians
are very upset with you right now.
he's one of the best point guards, you know, that came out in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you grow up loving LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and Steph Curry in other countries, then you're going to work at that said sport. Basketball has become global, so you're going to see more people from more countries being able to play that sport at a higher level. Hockey definitely is global. football is not global.
And I'm glad you brought up hockey, because I just asked Chase off air real quick just how many Americans are on the Predators, and he's got the numbers.
Yeah, so five that is on the current roster right now, and then there are two more that just signed as free agents that will most likely play with the Milwaukee Admirals, and I'm sure there are more with the Admirals. I didn't look through that entire roster, but there are five names that we all know that will be on this roster this year.
Out of 25?
Do you think that's accurate around the league, though? Do you think that's about right? About par?
Yeah.
20% American?
So many from Canada.
So what you're seeing is when you're talking every sport except football is even though it was not, you know, I don't think it was invented here in the U.S.
What, not American football?
Basketball. It was basketball that was in Canada, and then we've kind of taken it and did
really?
Some. Yeah, it was in Canada.
Naismith and the Peach Basket in Kansas and everything?
No, it was originated in Canada, okay. And we've taken it and kind of made it our sport.
Okay.
Now, we did take it. Technically, football was spawned out of rugby.
Yeah, yeah,
in the late 1800s,
right, yeah.
It was spawned out of rugby, and it was like Walter Camp and all these schools in the Northeast that were doing it, and you know, all those guys, and they sort of created the rules. But we created the forward pass and the
exactly.
down system, and we created football.
But it's not, as much as we love football, it's not a global sport. And that's where football, that's where the NFL is
lacking. Although the NFL's trying to make it global,
yeah, they're trying to
by
make
sending
it global,
games to London
absolutely.
And Mexico.
But I still don't think it's going to work because they're too far behind now. I think because when you talk hockey, baseball, and basketball, you're going to start seeing the influx of athletes that are just as good or even better than the ones that are here because the sport is global. These young men and women want to do what they see in the U.S. in those respect to sports. So they're working at it at such a young age that when they get, you know, 18, 19 and they're ready to play pro ball, we from the States are trying to go get them and to bring them over here. That's just how it is in those three major sports other than football.
Okay, we need to clarify something real quick because I had to look this up. So Dr. James Naismith was in fact Canadian,
yep.
But the game was actually invented in the United States.
But he was a Canadian.
So
that's why Canada,
like everything else is great in America.
Canada says we invented football basketball because
he's
he was
Canadian.
A Canadian. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I'd go for a Molson right now.
It did happen in Kansas, right? With the Peach Basket and all that stuff?
Massachusetts.
That's what I said. Kansas.
Yeah, Kansas.
Whatever.
But like I said, every great idea starts somewhere else, and then we take it and make it our own.
Uh-huh.
Freedom fries.
Isn't baseball kind of like from cricket or whatever?
In theory, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And again, rugby.
It's a good time.
Rugby sort of started football. But football is so I guess it's not really that crazy different. If you're telling me that cricket is the sort of predecessor, right? Like evolution takes place and we evolve from cricket to baseball and we evolve from rugby to football. Mm-hmm. That's the case.
The premise is the same, but yeah, there are a bunch of differences.
We made it more marketable.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Basically, that's what we did.
We took rugby and cricket and we said, how can we sell this to millions of people?
How can we make them want to buy
this? How can we make a fortune off this?
Exactly.
So, like, the whole point.
Then we invented radio and TV.
No. We didn't invent radio. We just perfected it.
Ah, my bad.
Come on, man. You gotta get the verbiage right.
My bad.
But, no, like, I was just watching yesterday. I'm at the gym, and I'm on the treadmill, and the Wimbledon was on, and I'm watching. I don't know if it was Federer or Nadal, but I'm just thinking, like, I would love to get – because I actually like the concept of tennis.
Isn't this a bad time to ask this question? Because don't we have an American? In the final four?
Do we?
Isn't John Isner in the final four?
I wouldn't know John Isner walked in right now.
Federer lost yesterday, I believe.
Did he really?
So I believe.
Yeah, he was up to.
And wasn't Isner the one that's was in like the 9.5
the South
hour?
South African beat him.
Was John Isner in the guy that had like the 3-day long match in Wimbledon a couple years ago where like they had to stop it and come back the next day and finish it?
Mm-hmm.
It just kept going. There was
I believe that's correct.
There was like 96 tie breaks or something crazy like that. Mm. But I believe, I don't know if Chase, you can double check this for me. I could have sworn he made it to the semis, which is amazing for an American because I don't think that's happened very often. But the question is, do we care? Like I grew up liking Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras and Steffi Graf. Like I like tennis.
I think tennis
when they were good, but
was
like,
a little bit
care?
More marketable than as a whole.
Well, there was personality.
Yeah, because
well,
you had personality.
Agassi with the mullet and the Canon commercials, and like he was, like he looked like a rebel.
But now is not other than.
And John McEnroe is one of the best analysts in the entire sports world. Mm-hmm. He is awesome at what he does.
But it's not as marketable as it has been. Why? Don't know. But it's just not. Maybe because you don't have the McEnroes and the Agassiz, the personalities.
There's no Americans.
Yeah, that you once had back in the day.
Like I watch Federer and Nadal, and they're unbelievable all-timers, mm-hmm. but they're boring, aren't they? They're so good, they're boring.
I like good and boring.
But they don't have any personality,
No,
though.
They don't have, no.
I mean, maybe they're marketable overseas, but I wouldn't say they're marketable here.
You don't see much marketing.
Unless you're a hardcore tennis guy.
Yeah.
Hardcore tennis guy worships Federer.
So it's Nadal versus Djokovic in one side, which, of course, those
We've
are names.
We've never seen that before.
Those are names that everybody knows, though. Those are like worldwide superstars. And then Isner versus Kevin Anderson, who I've never heard of, who's the eighth-rated player in the world, I guess, from South Africa. So we've got an American in the Final Four. Mm-hmm. So... You've been asking for it.
I'm going to watch it.
Now you have to watch it.
When do they play?
I don't
Tomorrow.
Know.
Tomorrow? Tomorrow during the show.
Okay. Oh, maybe that'll be my on tap for today. I'll just do a little preview.
During the show.
Exactly. Hey, guys, don't forget, join ESPN The Game, 102.5 Nashville's live coverage of the 2018 SEC Media Days, July 16th through the 19th. We'll anchor hours of daily coverage, bringing you interviews with coaches, players, and more. It's all brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Music City, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, the Omni Hotel at the Battery Atlanta, and Crane Works. When we come back to some football discussion. Is flag football the future? Stay there. Details on the other side on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, I got to blame D-Mace and Nick for something here, because you guys got me all hooked up on Staircase, the documentary on Netflix. My wife and I, we're like 7 or 8 episodes in now. We've gotten to the verdict and we can't stop watching it. The problem is I have to go to bed really early. So this is where Xfinity and the X1 Cloud DVR helps me, because she will just stay up and watch these stinking episodes. And she always goes further than I do, because I have to go to sleep. I fall asleep. But you know what? When I come home the next morning, like today, I'll get done with the show. I'll pop on the Xfinity X1 Cloud DVR and I'll know exactly where the episode is. It's sitting right there. I know where I left off. I can go find where I left off. And just because she watches a bunch of stuff past my bedtime doesn't mean I miss anything, so that I can catch up, because the X1 Cloud DVR has exactly what we were watching right there at my fingertips. He just puts a little button, X1 voice remote, say Staircase, boom, it pops up. I know exactly where we left off, so I can watch and keep up, because she's watching too much of this stinking show that you guys all got me hooked on, so I'm blaming all of you. Not Xfinity. They're great. They're the future of awesome. So get started and call 1-800-XFINITY, visit Xfinity.com, or drop into an Xfinity store today for more details.
Welcome back in the Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you on this Thursday. Is flag football the future of football? That was a column written by Mike Freeman, esteemed NFL columnist for Bleacher Report and BleacherReport.com. And let me just read you guys a quick little excerpt, because if there's one thing that drives me nuts of all the kind of recycled topics that go around and round and round in sports media, it's the doom and gloom of the future of football and what it looks like 10, 15, 30 years from now. So he says, is the future of football already here? While many of you spent 4th of July week at cookout, swimming, or stuck in traffic, I was watching flag football. Yes, the NFL Network had a flag football game on. There was no defense, no strategy. Despite the high caliber of athletes, it still resembled football I played in Central Park when I was a kid playing flag football. It was awful. And then he screenshots and grabs a couple of NFL columnists and insiders. Bucky Brooks of NFL Network was tweeting about it. He said he's not going to lie. He's pretty entertained by this. Benjamin Watson, former NFL tight end, says we are quite possibly watching the future of pro football. So you kind of get the gist of where I'm going here. It's a nice concept in theory, I guess. But if you think flag football is going to be the future of football, you're out of your mind.
Everybody wants to, as Nick Saban famously said, dead and buried, gone. Everybody wants to bury football. Everybody wants to say, you know, eventually it will be gone.
We're dead and buried and gone.
There it is.
Gone.
Right
there.
That
rat poison.
Everybody wants to do that to the NFL or football in general. Here's the truth. Where, you know, yes, flag football is fun. Yeah, it is entertaining. You're only going to be entertained for so long.
And look.
And then you're going to turn the channel. After a month of this, They're not. It's kind of like the old XFL. Mm-hmm. After a while, yeah, it was shiny.
Nice
and
little
gray.
Novelty act.
Yeah, let's watch it. After a while, nobody wanted to watch that.
I'm all for flag football for kids and even working it up to into the teens, like you said.
It is going to be at what age, Chase? I think it's 16 where hockey leagues allow checking. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's 15.
I think it's 16.
The point is there is a line where you play youth hockey growing up and you don't check. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a certain age and where you're a little bit more developed physically and your brains are a little bit further along development-wise, and you then are allowed to hit each other. And I think football is going the way of the 7-on-7 tournament until we get to a certain age. And I'm okay with that.
I'm fine.
So am I.
If you want to say 7-on-7 until at least high school, and then you say, all right, ninth grade, you can start full pad contact or whatever, then I'm okay with that. We've limited the amount of practice time that's happening. I get where he's – here's the question, though. Is there space in our sports minds and calendars for another season of football somewhere else?
No, not flag football, no.
Are you kidding me?
No, I would disagree. No. I would say yes.
I totally disagree with that.
People will get
tired. At a different time of year.
You put a flag football league on in July, I'll watch.
No, people will get tired of it. I'm telling you, it happened. Other than the USFL, that would have succeeded because it was...
Except for the owners.
Yeah, we thought that was the... It was almost a peer of the NFL.
So you don't think like a 4 to 6 week season of flag football in the dead of summer with the expectation that it's never going to replace the NFL?
Well, aren't they already doing this, though, with another league? This is why Phil Savage left to go be a – you know, aren't they starting this league where they've got –
Well, Vince McMahon's bringing back the XFL. Well.
But there's another one where they're
– the American Football Alliance, I think.
And they're going to have it in cities like Birmingham, and they're going to have like local players from the SEC teams that people know to go play in those leagues. I think football – is like we have an insatiable appetite for football. I think if you put it on at different times of the year, people would watch it. It's why we joke all the time about the Group of Five. If you took the Group of Five, right, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, Conference USA, Sun Belt, whatever, and you moved it to the spring and they had their own playoff, I think it would do extremely well television-wise. If you had a football season that ran from the last week of March through the end of July and you had a 10-week season that resulted in a 4-team playoff where the teams that were playing were – San Diego State, Middle Tennessee State, Western Kentucky, and Boise.
See, I think guys like you and I would be into it. I don't know if
this is
a mass appeal.
But this is the only reason or only way it will survive. Kind of like the WNBA. And I've watched some of those games, and I love watching those women play basketball because they can play. They can flat out play. I like watching women's college basketball as well because those women can flat out play. But the WNBA knew it had to attach itself to something in order to continue to thrive in that realm. And they sort of attached themselves to the NBA and with the WNBA and everything else. So if they're able to, you know, continue to play, are the crowds big? Probably not. But they're able to continue to field teams, continue to be on television because they've aligned themselves with the NBA. The only way this flag football thing will continue to prosper, if it does, is if they align themselves with the NFL. That's what some of these arena league teams did when the owners started, you know, owners of the NFL started owning teams in the arena league. That causes them to thrive because you don't want to be a competitor of the NFL. You want the NFL to be in bed with you.
Because you'll lose.
Yeah, because you'll lose.
They'll just squash you.
You'll lose. And if they want to squash your sport, they will. If you start to get a little bit too big, even if it's in off season, because the NFL wants to own 12 months. Mm-hmm. They want to own all of them. And it's going that way. You look at how they're doing a draft and free agency and everything else. Yeah. They want to own all 12 months. So if you become a...
And they do own.
Yeah, if you become a if you start to... damage, sort of speak, or become, you know, someone that can take away a portion of their viewership. They're either gonna squash you, or they're gonna get in bed with you, or they're gonna force you to get in bed with them.
Yeah,
in a sense,
you're not taking their market share.
Exactly.
I wanted to do a little fact checking on myself, and so I looked it up. It is actually 12 and under for USA Hockey. I pulled up the rule book, so 12 and under.
What's the Canadian number?
I just saw USA Hockey. I pulled up that rule book. So it's 12 and under in the States, and I think that's probably a universal thing. I know there. I've just saw some articles of wanting to raise it to 15 with checking, but that's what it is in hockey.
Right, I think now. Football, and I've always said this, you shouldn't really, honestly, you shouldn't play tackle before 7th, 8th grade. You just shouldn't. You're not getting anything out of it. But I think it's going to
be. You see these dads and these Pop Warner TV shows that are like screaming at
It's awful. And then the way they're running these kids, it's just awful. It's god awful.
There's always one kid.
I would pull my kid
off
in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree.
And I would go off. But here's the thing. It's not going to become where they outlaw or mandate that you can't play, or you the only time you can play or when you can play tackle football is at this age. It's going to be a state-by-state thing, because when you look at Texas, these southern states, they eat, breathe, live football. And we're talking peewee football. Mm-hmm. They love that stuff.
That's a way of life.
Exactly.
I mean,
so
it
would be hard. Yeah, it would be hard for them to all of a sudden say, you know what, we're taking it out. Now, when you go further up north, somewhere else, they are a little bit more lenient.
I remember stepping out onto the football field in sixth grade in Austin, Texas, and just being terrified. Like, by seventh grade, I had gone from like the B team to the A team or whatever, and I wasn't a starter, but like I had found my footing at least a little bit, gotten a little stronger, and figured it out. But like, just the size and speed of people, and what's really interesting is I was so naive, not only here and there are players that played at Franklin High School in the 90s that I knew that were on stuff that they shouldn't have been on. Mm-hmm. But the people in Texas, I remember being a freshman, my freshman year in high school at a high school, Drew Brees was the senior quarterback. So this was 10,000 people every Friday night at the stands, like winning state championships. This is varsity blues. I mean, my high school was varsity blues, basically. They won the 5A state title. You know, they were like I said, AstroTurf fields and 10,000 people and PSLs for the fans and stuff. Like, it was insane.
PSLs for high school?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
No, there's PSLs everywhere in Texas. Everywhere. South Lake Carroll in Dallas.
They got stadiums that cost $90 million.
Yeah, there are 18,000 people. And so it was varsity blues. And I remember being a freshman in like Spanish class, sitting next to like one of the sophomore defensive linemen, and then this guy was like 3 feet taller than me. He was 100 pounds heavier and completely insane. He is complete. He clearly was taking something, and I'm going. And I was so naive. I just thought this guy was crazy. I didn't think he was like on some steroid or whatever the heck that people were taking in 1996.
Fast forward, but
I was scared out of my mind. I was like, I'm gonna have to practice with that guy in a couple of years.
It will be state by state, but do I think I will say it, and I will continue to beat this drum, there's no reason why you should have your kid playing tackle football before he gets in seventh, eighth grade, before he gets in eighth grade, really.
All right, is flag football the future? 615-737-1025. We'll come back, continue this conversation. Stay there. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 1025 The Game. Coming up, 8 o'clock hour, we'll continue as we have all week long, our SEC team-by-team college football preview. We've done Alabama, Georgia, Auburn. Today, the Florida Gators. So that's coming up at 8 o'clock. But talking about the future of football, Mike Freeman from Bleacher Report writing a piece, and then a lot of guys... Bucky Brooks, former tight end Ben Watson, all watching the flag football game that was going on the NFL Network. And of course, we've got to go all the way to the extreme end of things and say, flag football is the future of football. 20 years from now, there'll be no million-dollar NFL teams and corporations, no fantasy football. It's all going to just go away. And we're going to play flag football.
Well, unless flag football starts to make billions of dollars, then yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Well, the only question that none of us can answer and predict is, in 15 years, what does the labor force look like for the NFL? And I tend to think that as long as there are underprivileged people in this country looking for a way to provide for their families, that we will always have a workforce to play football. And we are seeing to it that we will always have an underprivileged group of people in this country.
It's not even – it's that, and then it's if you have the skill set, if you are that athletic – and maybe you're not 6'4", 6'5", meaning basketball, 6'6", 6'7", then there's always going to be a place for for the NFL. There's always going to be a place for the NBA. There's always going to be a place for MLB and hockey.
Even if the quality of the game decreases,
you're always
going to find someone to play middle linebacker for the Ravens.
Absolutely.
It's not going.
Football's not going anywhere.
Yeah, now, again,
love for it might diminish a little bit, you know, or the viewership, yeah, but I don't think it's going
anywhere. And what I think happens then is the NFL adapts. Now, I guess what Freeman is saying is that when you adapt enough times and you change the, like, we've changed the rules a lot, right? Like with the concussion rules and the targeting rules and the you can't touch the quarterbacks and you can't touch receivers. And we continue to, he's thinking big, like 15, 20 years from now, not only are parents not allowing their kids to play football at a higher rate, which is definitely true, but also it is the game, are the rules themselves trending in a direction that we eventually just lead to no contact? I actually think, and I think D-Mace, you and I have talked about this, if you take the face masks off of the helmets, I know it seems counterintuitive, but rugby players know how to tackle.
They play different.
Rugby players can tackle safely. And if you can tackle safely, that solves so many of the problems.
Yeah, because when you have a face mask and all this other stuff, you feel like you're just a human missile.
It doesn't stop. I don't know how you solve the blocking aspect of this, you know, like a fullback and a middle linebacker or a left guard and a defensive tackle. I don't know how you solve that problem. But if you're talking about open space, you know, safety trying to tackle a like, look at how rugby players tackle. They form tackling is excellent in rugby, and none of them are hitting with their faces. they don't wear anything on their head. So, I don't know. I'm not as worried about it. But the rules could eventually change the game so much that it gets to a point where we don't recognize it as it looks today.
615-737-1025. Let's say good morning to Mark in Nashville, who's up next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. What's up, Mark?
Hey guys, man. First off, I want to say I love the show. Just moved here a couple months ago. I found you guys, so I love it.
Cool. I just moved here a couple of months ago as well, and I love the show as well. So we got a lot in common.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, I'm actually from Florida. I grew up playing tackle football. I grew up, actually went to school with Anthony Hargrove, who later played in the NFL and stuff.
We
graduated at the same time. But growing up, though, I played tackle. I saw a lot of young kids who were 6th, 7th, 8th grade. Who got injured and ruined their lives at torn ACLs. You know, separate shoulders, and they can never play football again. And just seeing all that and going through it and what the coaches did to us, I'm all for flag football. I have two kids, and they're going to be playing flag football up until, you know, high school.
I think, Mark, I agree. I think the issue is the to me, it's the how – it's a lot of times it's the parents and the coaches. Like we were talking about with these Pop Warner coaches that are coaching 8-year-old kids to just, like, destroy each other. And that's not – that's not going to help anybody. It doesn't help the kid. It doesn't help the sport. It doesn't help any. There's a reason that checking in the NHL or in hockey leagues isn't allowed till 13 years old. Like it should at least be at 13 years old for football. I think most freshmen are 14, right? I was probably 13, but most freshmen in high school are 14 years old, roughly speaking. I think that's a perfectly legitimate time to say, all right, now you can hit each other. Now you can tackle. But like 6 years old, your brain is just not.
But did you notice what he said, though, about the injuries? He said ACL, separated shoulder. I don't think anybody's concerned about those type of injuries with football. All this stems from above the neck.
Yeah, because they know that, listen, if you play the sport long enough, eventually you're going to have something's going to break. You're going to break a wrist, a finger, hand, ankle, you know, tear meniscus, tear ACL. If you walk away from the game unscathed, that means you didn't play. You just put on a suit and stood on the sideline. But people are willing to accept that. People are not willing to accept the head trauma anymore.
Right.
Because now is in the forefront. And this is what I want to know from the guy from the parents. I'm just going to say parents, man, you know, mom, dad. What are you getting out of putting your son and tackle football when he's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old? 12 years old. Let's just say 12.
Certainly not the fundamentals because it's terrible at that level.
What are you really getting that they can't get?
The only thing I can think of.
7-on-7.
The only thing I can think of is the discipline, the ability to work with
the
team.
No, you still get all of that.
Yeah,
you
true.
Still get all of that in flag football. You still get all of that in 7-on-7 because we got to work together. Now, if they want to throw, well, you can't get the same with the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman. Well, send them to camps. There are specialized camps.
Position camps.
Yeah, position camps. We got some of the best former offensive linemen in the state of Tennessee. You know, former NFL offensive lineman in the state of Tennessee. We have them here. You can send your kid to one of these guys, and they can teach you the fundamentals of playing offensive line or defensive line, defensive players that are living here or in your respective state. So that I'm not going to accept. Well, the offensive lineman, defensive lineman, that's a different story. No, because you can put them in camps. You put them in camps during the summer, don't you? When there's no tackle football or during those months where there's no tackle football, so you put them in these camps. And you're paying $300-$400, mm-hmm. so you should be able to do that all year round. There's right. just no. To me, I've gotten to a point now because I've seen it, I played it, I watched my son play it, and continue to play now. And I hear these stories, and my ex-wife, wonderful woman, and her and I talk about this all the time. Do we really want our son to play football? I don't want to tell him no because my mom and dad didn't tell me no. But the more and more you watch this, and it's like, man.
And I know people don't want goodness. I know people don't want to hear this, but there's also a financial element to this where if you are, and this is what I always go back to with like the kids in the Caribbean mm-hmm. who grow up really, really, really poor mm-hmm. in large families, like, and then a Major League Baseball team shows up in the Dominican Republic with a 14-year-old kid and says, hey, you know, take this pill, it'll make you a better shortstop or whatever. Like I never questioned why a poor young person who can change their family's existence forever decides to take steroids mm-hmm. or something, or HGH or whatever it may be, cut corners or take the paycheck or mm-hmm. whatever. Like, I never fault the motives there.
Exactly.
Because you're trying to change your family's life forever. And I think there is absolutely a question of, you know, financial existence here, that if you are the more well off you are, the less likely you are willing to put your kids in through the trauma of playing that.
And
as long as we have, again, this goes back to, and this crosses all demographics. Mm-hmm. It's about money. Mm-hmm. And if you can change your family's fortune forever in exchange for a couple of years of CTE, most people are going to take that deal.
Why do you see people walking in and out of casinos all day, every day?
They can
spend their whole paycheck, they can't pay the bills the next month, but they want that opportunity to get that one big paycheck.
The one issue is that we look at that and we go, oh, that's your only way out of poverty is to be a great NFL player, when we know full well, or NBA or whatever, we know full well that, like, there's a less than 1% chance that mm-hmm. you're going to do that.
Exactly.
And that's the problem, is we've got thousands of kids playing the sport. All of them think they're going pro, and none of them are going
but
pro.
But even to that, it's like, don't you want to give yourself as many options to get out of your situation as you possibly can? And if football, basketball, baseball, hockey is one of those options, soccer is one of those options, then I should take it. But I'm not going to do it in regards to football. I'm not going to do it at the expense of my child from the age of 5 or 6 to, 12. That age, he shouldn't have to deal with headaches and all that other stuff. Even 13, 14, 15, really. But I'm just trying to put an age limit, right. Age limit on this.
Coming up next, Jeff Fisher in the news and Adam Pac-Man Jones in the news. Details on both when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in the Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mason, Chase. SEC previews continuing today, 8 o'clock hour. We will focus on the Florida Gators. Next segment, Pat Dooley from the Gainesville Sun, as Dan Mullen begins year number one in Gainesville. All right, so a couple of things we have to get to. Handful of different things with football. Jeff Fisher, Pac-Man Jones, Titans releasing their camp schedule. We'll do all of that here. So yesterday, news comes out, Mike McCarthy of Sporting News reporting that Jeff Fisher, possibly being courted by Fox Sports to be an NFL game analyst. Your initial reaction when you heard the news that the guy that we just had in the studio about a month ago could be heading to the booth?
I'm happy for Jeff, honestly, because he's a part of that quote-unquote old guard in the NFL. He's one of those old coaches that just love ball. He's not old, but I'm saying he's been
there. I don't
think
he'd like you saying
that.
Yeah,
he's coached in his league for a very long time. Heck, he played on that 85 Bears team. when they won a Super Bowl. And
USC defensive back, right?
USC defensive back. Yeah. So
still looks relatively young, yeah. Good shape.
Jeff, yeah, it's amazing what $6 million a year exactly. will do for you.
He had a nice tan when he came in studio. He had sandals
like
on.
He owns like a farm out in like Leaper's Fork. He just fishes all day.
He's
pretty
just living a life, Yeah. But he's one of those guys where, you know, football is in his blood and coaching football is in his blood. So you want to get back somehow, some way. If it's not coaching, then how can I get back that type of that type of motivation or that feeling that I get, you know, during the season when I'm a coach? How can I get that feeling back? Well, you know, if it's not coaching, then maybe it's talking about football or breaking football down. So I'm happy for Jeff. You know, if it does indeed happen, I hope he does well. I'm pretty sure there will be a learning curve for him. And as we talked earlier, you know, it's going to be either or. Some people are going to love him. Some people are going to hate him. And we'll find out very quickly where he kind of lands on that sliding scale.
I have a tough time. I think he's smart. He knows the game. I think he could be very, I think he would be very, what's the word I'm looking, insightful. Mm-hmm. I think he would pick up on stuff and he'd be great. My question is the delivery and the actual broadcast ability. Despite what people may think, it actually does take talent to speak into a microphone. And I think I don't know if he has the delivery. And you could think about musicians, right? Mm-hmm. Like Bob Dylan couldn't sing, but he knew how to play his voice like an instrument, right? Mm-hmm. Like he couldn't carry a tune, but he learned how to play it and use it to his advantage to kind of to be the artist that he was. If Jeff Fisher knows how to do that, then he should be okay because he's plenty smart and he knows the game and he knows the players. And frankly, being this closely, what I like the new trend in broadcasting is players that are and coaches that are this closely removed from the game. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of insight into the current athletes that are actually, like, Jeff Fisher has scouted against Russell Wilson 100 times. Like, he knows the tendencies of Russell Wilson mm-hmm. so well, he should be able to kind of give that to fans in a way that adds to the broadcast. I just don't know if the actual delivery is something you could take 17 weeks in a row. Like, if he does, like, two games and it's sort of like a one-off thing, then I think it'd be interesting and it could be fun, part of a three-man booth. But I just don't know if, like, the low, grovelly, fast talk, dry delivery, I don't know if that works in a broadcast booth setting as well as, like, a Rex Ryan personality where he's just, like,
yeah,
larger than life and has a lot of
interesting things
to say.
But I don't think Rex will work in a booth. I just don't think Rex will work in a booth. I think he works better as an analyst.
I think Jeff would be better in that role, too.
Yeah, I think Jeff would be really good as an analyst because then he can – because there's more people on the panel, and it doesn't cause for you to have to think very quickly. Not to say, and I'm not saying that by no means am I saying that Jeff can't think very quick because he can. That's not what I'm saying, people. But you get an opportunity as an analyst to sit back and hear everybody else's opinion, and then
On a set like that, you probably scripted out your answer.
Absolutely,
the whole thing
and then whether that you know his raspy voice, it might come off better. As an analyst on a Fox morning show with right. two or three other people, as opposed to being in a booth with maybe one other person.
Well, and part of the reason, you know, part of the reason Chase does the voice, and we laugh when Chase does the Jeff Fisher voice.
Thank you.
Is that it's like kind of this weird, low, bizarre delivery. Like it's not. Chase isn't coming on and being like, "Hey guys, welcome to NFL football on Sundays," and he's like,
"Actually,"
and he's doing Jeff Fisher's voice. No, he's like,
"Chase, can you give us the update on the stupid poll question of the day in the Jeff Fisher voice?"
See, I had already thought of that, and you read my mind. Yeah, so you can go to @1025_MD. As a Titans fan, do you like Jeff Fisher? Of course you do. I mean, great, great coach, had good times. D-Mace, great player. 61%. Say yes.
Okay.
39% say no.
So okay. within the Titans world, that's a good 60-40 split there. But again, even in that voice, think about like a big third down call on a big game, and all of a sudden he's like,
Chase, give me a big third down play.
Aaron Rodgers drops back to pass. He rolls left. He throws an incomplete pass. What was he thinking there on the play call, Coach?
Well, I mean, he wasn't thinking there. I mean, he didn't find – you got to have reliable wide receivers like we had, you know, with Derek Mason and Kevin Dyson.
Now
and,
you're not doing
you
it.
You know, you just – Don't, it
now
didn't
just
have that.
Silly.
Didn't have that. Now, you know, they're going to have to go for a field goal, which, you know, that's never a bad idea. You know, I think sometimes you take 3 points, and I mean, you got to take the points. Can't take points off the board.
But, like, and that's going to sell people. I mean, we joke a little bit. Uh-huh. That's not exactly what he would sound like, but that is, you know, it's not too far off from what he sounds like.
A couple of responses to the poll. A. Cheney 91 says, I'm at about 500. And then Adam says, there it is. Adam goes, love him. Only wagon jumping posers hate him. He's a legend and represents the city with class. And Bud made the Vince problem a problem. Jeff is a Super Bowl caliber coach.
And I don't know. Again, that's what I'm interested to find out, because mm-hmm. I never really thought, you know, as a non-Titans fan, but living here in the market, not covering the Titans, I always thought that Jeff Fisher was fairly well respected amongst fans and the people.
I
of the
think
city.
They made fun of the 8-8, and you know
that came around later in his,
yeah, 3 yards
in
a cloud of dust, or playing, you know, control football. I think people made fun of that tongue in cheek.
Well, he became a social media punchline.
But we were winning with that type of football, so. You know, whether you liked it or not, you know, when we first got here and we moved into the stadium, then Adelphia, that's how we were winning ball games, and we were winning a lot of them. So, yeah, you can make fun of it, but he found a formula that worked, and we excelled at it. I think, again, people just – they like to make fun of the whole 8-8 thing and 7-9 or whatever the case may be, but I think genuinely people – he didn't do anything to upset anyone. He was more or less genuine. He was approachable. And people in Nashville enjoy that.
Speaking of formulas, does Dan Mullen have the formula to get Gainesville and the Swamp back to national prominence? We'll talk to Pat Dooley as we start our SEC preview with the Florida Gators coming up next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.